the Nonprofit Podcast, powered by DonorBucks.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Podcast. I'm Kara, fundraising coach at DonorBucks. We're here each week with practical actions you can use today to increase donations and take your nonprofit to the next level tomorrow. And what do you think? Can direct mail take your nonprofit to the next level tomorrow? I think you might be surprised. You know, when you look at the big nonprofits, the revenue generated from direct mail can often cover the entire general operating budget. It's direct mail that's powering their mission and keeping their lights on. And that's something nonprofit leaders, founders, and fundraisers from organizations of any size can implement into their own fundraising strategy. Joe Leach joins the Nonprofit Podcast today to answer some questions about direct mail this giving season and beyond. Joe is the owner of AppealMaker, a software-based direct mail suite that offers easy, affordable, and effective direct mail production from start to finish for organizations of all sizes. He offers expertise in data analysis for more than 20 years and has been in the direct mail industry for more than 30. I'm excited to learn from Joe today. So Joe, welcome.
Thanks, Kara. Nice to be with you.
Well, direct mail is on the mind of a lot of nonprofits during giving season, especially. And in recent months, many nonprofits reported their best mail campaign results ever. Why do you think that this is?
My guess is I think there's a lot of reasons, but my guess is that the pandemic has definitely created a paradigm shift in many ways. And in this way, so many people were working from home. They essentially had more time. They were there. I think that direct mail was one of those things that they finally had time to look at instead of just trying to do the old separating and the shucking and seating, so to speak, of your mailbox. I think the other thing that's happened from a marketing standpoint, psychologically, people have realized that it isn't a either or scenario. It's not either email or direct mail. It's not either social media and with email and social media, they always went together. People always thought, oh, those will complement each other. Well, now they know from experience that direct mail will complement all of the other things that you do. So now it's seen as an addition to things. And I think you're right in your introduction when you said it can certainly be the generator of most of your income.
And I guess I should clarify that when we're talking about direct mail, we're talking about any printed physical mailing that's sent out through the Postal Service. And when we're talking about fundraising and we say direct mail, we're often referring to appeal letters that are created to be delivered through the mail, right?
That and any kind of stewardship communications, that would be a big part of it because those also complement each other. They're very necessary. For one to work, you need the other one to support what's going on. Because when you communicate with people through mail, then you know that's how they communicate, or it's certainly one of the ways they communicate. So if you ask by mail, but then report by your website or your social media, then you're going to have a little bit of a disconnect, most likely. There was one other thing that is true about direct mail that people have realized during this kind of shift is that direct mail it's not fragmented. And what I mean by that is social media, not everybody uses Facebook. Not everybody uses LinkedIn. Not everybody, right? Everybody has their choice. I prefer this. I prefer that. Some people love email. Some people hate email. Some people will let you communicate with them through text. Other people don't like that at all. Everybody's got a mailbox.
Yeah, it's a unifier. And then, you know, you can take that core messaging of your appeal letter, and we talk about this a lot too, and syndicate that content through email and social media. So you're reinforcing that message. And because not everyone is seeing it across all these channels every time you communicate it, you're giving them more opportunities to hear your message and respond.
Yes, absolutely. The other thing that I have seen happen is that in the scarcity of envelopes and paper, there's been a little bit of that urgency, almost kind of a panic, like I better do a direct mail campaign because in a month when I decide I might want to do one, I can't, you know, do one now. So I think it really pushed people to do things more frequently and sooner than they would have.
It's always good to be proactive. And direct mail success. We talked about the ways that it can be boosted through multi-channel approaches, through email and social media. But when you're measuring direct mail specifically, what is a successful direct mail campaign?
Yeah, I'm gonna start by saying everybody's gonna hate my answer. my answer is a good response rate could be 0.5% up to 14%, mm-hmm. and I've seen it through all of my years. It's the one question that people ask almost always at the beginning of a conversation when they're vetting us, trying to learn more about us. They want to know what response rates does this template get? What response rate does this strategy get? What response rate? And unfortunately, my answer is there's only one way to determine, or there's only one good response rate, and that is better than the one you got last time. I know I'm not trying to be coy or elusive in answering the question, but I'm pretty steadfast in not just throwing out answers, trying to lead people to use our services or to use direct mail in general. So a really great example, we have done mailings for hospital foundations for years and years, really where we cut our teeth in the nonprofit sector. And we would get response rates, particularly to grateful patient mailings, which were acquisition mailings, that would vary greatly. And when we researched what the variables were, there were many. A great example is if we were doing a grateful patient mailing for a healthcare organization that was in a large but somewhat rural area and had no competition, they would often make money on their acquisition mailings. They would, and in other cases, when we were working with a healthcare organization that was in a large city that had three major competitors, then we would see the opposite. So that's about the best example I can give you of how things can change. It's really important for you to know your response rates, because that is another error in conducting a direct mail campaign. So often people do it and don't even pay attention to the results. And yet they will ask, what response rate am I going to get? Quite often I will ask them, what are you getting now? And they will say, I don't know. So it's just important to know those things.
And there are so many things that can boost that response rate. And we recently spent some time on a webinar together talking about the top 10 direct mail hacks, meaning some tips and tricks to boost direct mail open rates and direct mail response rates. Joe, I know we don't have time to recap all 10 today. So if you could share only 3 direct mail hacks that really help boost direct mail as part of a fundraising strategy for organizations, what would these hacks be?
Yeah, I would say the remit slip that's detached and nested in the letter. And the purpose of that is when people open up and read the letter, the remit slip will drop in their lap. So it brings attention to the most important part of your direct mail campaign or of your direct mail appeal, I should say. Number 2, do a follow-up, particularly to any donor renewal mailings. It is not only going to bring you more donations, but it will boost your retention rates astronomically. If you don't send the follow-up, anybody who does not answer is someone who you've left months between the next time you ask. And space between appeals is where donors fall off. And number 3, I would say deliver the product. When we send an appeal, we have an offer. We are selling something. We're selling them an opportunity to participate. We're offering them the stewardship of their money, right? We're helping them use their money, put their money to good. We're helping them feel good about what they're doing. If I send a mailing, if I get a donation and I don't tell anybody what it went for, I have not delivered my product. And so that's my advice. Deliver your product. Mm-hmm.
And it's all about capturing the donor's attention through some of those suggestions you just mentioned, keeping it and then stewarding it so that they feel like they are a true partner in your mission and your partner in making change in this world.
I always thought of stewardship, and I think most people do, as stewarding our donors. But you can also think about it as stewarding the donor's donation to its end purpose.
Absolutely, because, you know, the donor's donation, they can choose to give it to you, to your organization. They can choose to give it to an organization that's similar to yours, maybe down the road, or they can choose to go spend it however they'd like. And in this economy and in this world, there are a lot of choices. So you as an organization have to prove that you are worthy and will take good care of the money they trust you with.
Yes, I agree.
Well, organizations of any size can benefit from direct mail. And I often work with smaller organizations who really wrestle with using direct mail. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to an executive director or board member, the investment in direct mail. And so if you're a small organization, does it make sense to use a direct mail provider or do it in-house or do it at all? What do you think?
Well, in eighth grade, Mr. Hegley taught me a lesson that I didn't put to use until I was much, much older. And he taught us about the concept of opportunity cost. And the concept of opportunity cost says, whenever you're considering anything from a buying standpoint, this was his perspective, there isn't just the direct cost of something. There is, if I spend this money on something, then I do not have the ability to spend it on something else. So how does this apply to the answer to your question is if you simply say, I have time, or you say, I'm being paid a salary, and so my time is very economical. And maybe you could even put a figure to it, where you could say, this is how much it's going to cost me, or you say, it's free. That is not the only consideration. The other consideration is, if you are spending time on this, what are you not spending time on? What is it taking you away? And what is the opportunity cost of deciding to spend your time doing your mailing in-house? And the other consideration that I would bring up is, can you do it as well as an outside service? So a great example would be if you cannot do a remit slip that's personalized, but, you know, so people will say, well, I'm going to do it in-house, and no, I can't put their name with a gift string and everything on, I can't do that in-house, but I'm saving all that money from not having to spend it with a mail house. You have to say, if I did it with the mail house and I got more donations because I did it better, wouldn't that be the way to think about the question?
Opportunity cost. That, I mean, it's very similar to what we just said about donors' money too. There are so many choices, and just stewarding your time and the donors' money are key to those. And so let's say you decide as an organization that it does make more sense to go outside to find a direct mail provider to help you with your fundraising appeals. How do you find the best source of information as you're vetting, you know, these providers that make sense for your organization and make sense for your budget?
I'd say there's probably three things that are going to come into play in terms of trying to find somebody to work with for your direct mail. The first is certainly going to be how many pieces that you're mailing, because there are a limited number of vendors who are set up to work with really small mailings. Appealmaker is one of them. It's exactly what we designed Appealmaker for. And it doesn't mean that we can't do bigger mailings, but it was really meant for organizations that couldn't find a direct mail company to work with. The other thing I would take into consideration would be your direct mail experience and your acumen. And this could affect things in two different ways. A, you might have the expertise to work with a bigger mailing company or your local mailing house. Because oftentimes local mailing companies don't have specific nonprofit experience. But if you have experience and you can run the show, so to speak, then that works. The other thing I would take into consideration with, if you're very experienced, is you could, as I said, work with a larger direct mail company, and your experience could complement, you know, what they're doing. And you can feel comfortable that they're doing the right thing, I guess. And then the last thing would be what I just mentioned, your time. You know, even if you do have the experience, does it make sense for you to be doing this versus somebody else? And the same thing about if you're a small company doing it or a small organization doing it in-house. Directly, yes, it makes sense. I'm saving money. I'm not spending this money. But you have to ask yourself, is that really the best way to go about it? So that's how I would look at that.
Yeah. In our world, we're definitely working with limited time, limited budgets, and limited staff capacity. So that's excellent advice, Joe. Thank you. And Joe, I can tell that you really do enjoy helping clients at all stages, from beginners to those seasoned vets that you were just talking about, and helping them accomplish their goals year after year, campaign after campaign. So thank you for sharing your insight with us today. I know I always learn a lot from you. Thanks so much for joining us.
It was truly, truly my pleasure. Thank you, Kara.
And Joe did a terrific job of explaining all of this, and he certainly made the case for direct mail and its role in an overall fundraising strategy. And because of this, nonprofit development teams really need to have direct mail down to a science. And writing good fundraising appeals is a big key of that. It is a little bit art and a little bit science. There's a lot of data out there that shows what works and what doesn't when it comes to writing fundraising appeals. And we are very excited to invite you into joining us for a deeper dive into appeal writing. We just launched a course for you called Asks That Engage. And this is an appeal writing course that you can apply to your appeal writing strategy during giving season and all year long. We'll guide you step by step through the process of writing these powerful fundraising appeals that you can turn into direct mail letters that you can syndicate into emails and social media posts. And you'll receive some on-demand, bite-sized instructions so you're not overwhelmed. We have some great best practices checklists, some real life examples to show you what works and what doesn't. You'll receive an appeal writing workbook and some templates for a mailed appeal, plus email and social media follow-ups, and a structured content calendar. And it's only $49. So go ahead and click the link in today's show notes or visit us at academy.donorbox.org and enroll today. And your access to the content will not expire. So you can go ahead and take that at your own pace. And thank you for choosing to spend time with the Nonprofit Podcast. I hope you've left with confidence to take a small step today that will make a big difference tomorrow. Don't forget to download and review the podcast or give it a thumbs up if you're listening to the Nonprofit Podcast on YouTube. Your review is a great way to help others find us. You're here to help others. We're here to help you. So until next time, stay inspired.
The Nonprofit Podcast, powered by DonorBox, helping you help others.